Welcome back. You are with RCR here with Marie, and joining me now, back for a new year, 2025. My brother from another mother, Mr. Matawai Mayhem, my Matawai twin, really, Marty Gibson. How are you, Marty?
I'm good, thanks, Marie. Yep, it's just grinding, creaking back into consuming media again, and I haven't consumed as much as all that this week. So forgive us. I listened to the teaser like yesterday. And I thought, oh man, we're back at square one. So many ums and ahs, and so bear with us, please. Or me,
I know, it's been so hard retoxing back in, and just we had this, remember, this time last year, because I know that when we came back, I came back a little bit later last year. So we're recording this. This is going to drop actually Waitangi Day. So you guys are going to be hearing this Waitangi Day. We recorded it yesterday, the 5th. On the 5th last year, I arrived back into New Zealand after being in South America for a big long stretch and got hit with the wall of Waitangi, as I called it, with the Waitangi protests and all the rest of it. And I found it, I remember saying to you what just an acute culture shock that was after having 6 weeks away in peaceable South America to come back to the supposed unrest. And I mean, let's start with Waitangi Day. Are you feeling that unrest is still there? Is it more the same, different, in light of the Treaty Principles Bill, and Seymour actually having the cojones to head up to Waitangi in person?
Oh, he loves it. He's like a pig in shit.
He is.
probably hoping he gets a big fat dildo chucked in his head.
I have this man.
Catch it with his mouth.
I know. Gosh, he is like that puppy, isn't he? He is. I think he's loving every minute of this.
Well, it's been, I mean, you have to reflect back on this first, well, this first part of this government term has been really, in many ways, overshadowed by that. And, you know, we can talk a bit more later what the coalition has to do to win back support and shut out the less freedom and more government end of the political spectrum, which they must. But I think that it has been a wasted opportunity that we've spent so much time. And it's speaking to the media side of things, it's been a real lost opportunity that they haven't teased out some of those issues and actually had a debate, which is what he said he wanted. But we've got to remember that they can't do that. They can't do that because they're still bound by the conditions of the Public Interest Journalism Fund. And as such, they have to say that Māori never ceded sovereignty, that New Zealand's a systemically racist country, and that what else does it say? Māori are disadvantaged by it and need special treatment. And we saw that continue in One News, did a huge article on how important DEI is for New Zealand, how vital it is that Māori get preferential treatment. They use that standard, this is equality and this is equity. And that would be all well and good if our public broadcasters had some counterbalance, someone who thought, well, actually, I think it's great that Trump's in power and all those people are going through the American system and actually this time draining the swamp. What's in our swamp? If we're having that discussion, then it wouldn't be so galling just to see. I watched One News in the morning on Tuesday, I think it was. Jenny May was interviewing Luxon, and just the thinly disguised contempt she had for him. It was incredible. And just the one track, how is Māori and Crown relations? How is Māori Crown relations? It's like, dude, there's so much other stuff that we could talk about. And yeah, just always showing her bottom teeth because her bottom lip was resting on her desk. But then yesterday morning, I watched her interview Chris Hipkins, and she was hopping from foot to foot and just giving him these softball questions that allowed him to criticize what the government are doing. It was just gross.
I think particularly with the decision that they made in regards to, because they trimmed that team down and, you know, they trimmed it down to a small group of activists, essentially. That, I think, is going to become their own undoing over time. And I know that you'll probably look at that in the Fourth Estate. But the Christopher Luxon didn't get a free ride. I mean, he certainly got questioned. I didn't watch him with Jenny May, but I did listen to him on Tuesday morning with Mike Hosking on ZB. And Mike was really did give him the borax over a great number of issues, and especially around, you know, potentially similar with climate change and that option. And one of the things that amazed me with that is he trotted out that no, he just absolutely fixed really firm into that climate agenda, and that, and we'll look at this maybe a little later, but the floating that Seymour did of, well, you know, if the Americans are pulling out of these Paris climate accords, I think the Indonesians are now gone, there's a few others looking at it. I mean, let's at least float the idea that this could be something that we would consider. I mean, he's reading the room. He'll know where a number of his constituents are at on this topic.
How's he reading the room?
No, I'm not talking Luxing, I'm talking Seymour.
Right.
In the sense that he's possibly looking at where the winds of cultural change are happening internationally. Oh. And Christopher Luxon is fixated, isn't he?
Yeah, we're fixated on zero carbon by two. But yeah, the things he says, just he's so tenured. And I mean, I spend a lot of time on X these days, more than I should probably. But every post now, it's got, we've got to get out of the Paris Accord. And I think the problem, and I alluded to this in our teaser this week, he's more interested in his he's fixated on his CV, and he's thinking about the big boys' jobs he's going to get access to, chairman of the World Bank or something like that. And so he's not going to step out of line, even if not stepping out of line is grossly against our national interests. He's a globalist. He's all on. Well, I feel bad for, you know, to our listeners as much as anything. I know, I mean, we were talking before we started today about how wearying it is to have unrelenting negativity. So I don't want to, you know, we'll get there in the end. And you know, I mean, there are some good aspects to Christopher Luxon, but I think he probably would have been a better deputy prime minister to someone else's more common touch leader. I think that would have been a better arrangement, because, you know, if you look at a CEO, they've got a board to contend with. If you set them loose without a board, I think he's kind of lost his compass a little bit.
Yeah. The one of the things I said to you when I was writing Kiwi Farm a couple of days ago is that it's almost like your David Brent meme that you've been doing around Christopher Luxon for all of last year and a bit of the year before, which has sort of caught a little bit of traction in recent months. It's almost like he's taken that to heart. And when he came back for the new year and started with that cabinet reshuffle, I said to you, and I built into Kiwi Farm, I almost felt like he'd been away and he'd done some reading, you know, and read a whole bunch of self-help books, and he went sort of full David Brent on things when he got back, which is a, you know, meme from The Office. And it's that whole kind of almost head boy type persona, but you're right, without that support network there. And I look at the reshuffle, let's just have a quick look at the reshuffle, because I still really can't quite understand why. And I don't know whether it's because they're just wanting to freshen things up, whether it's because they want to keep some of the people that are working within those ministries on their toes, if they were getting complacent with the minister that they had. I have no shadow of a doubt that some of these ministers are being bullied by the staff that they oversee, or even the CEOs that they oversee. And I wonder whether this had befallen Shane Retty, because what I have seen in just the little sort of susance that I've had from him, just watching him and observing him, is I think he's too nice. And having first-hand experience with those that are deeply entrenched within the Ministry of Health that I have had, there are a pack of piranhas in there, and I want to say another word, but I can't because it's very rude and quite crass, but they are not nice. And they...
Yeah, a lot of smiley mouths and hard eyes. And
oh,
we're just,
yeah.
We're just, you know, we're just going to carry on doing what we do. And, you know, I'm sure you want that, and we'll try our best to implement it. But as you know, bloody, bloody, blah. Yeah, you gotta. I mean, the tide has well and truly turned, hasn't it? With what Trump's doing, with what Malay's doing, and how it's working, and you know, New Zealand has got a fork in the road coming up where we decide: are we either going to do that, or are we going to follow Klaus Schwab and slowly sink into this global neo-feudalism? Where corporates, I mean, there are enough stupid people in New Zealand to elect that kind of thing if they get more borrowed money, because that's why they're squealing now.
Yeah. What worries me is the depth on the bench in National, or is it depth on the bench, or is there actually issues around being able to express your own opinions and express those quite freely? So, for example, a good example of that is Simeon Brown, who's probably like National's poster child at the moment. He's actually deeply conservative. He holds deeply conservative views, particularly around abortion and families. And the media tried to attack him on that. And Simeon is very clever. He's actually kept a lot of those opinions sort of very much on the DL. And I just can't help but wonder, why doesn't Luxon just actually allow his MPs to shine on their own merits, bring a little bit of themselves to the role, engage themselves with the voters, and in turn bring them to Team National? But it's like he's applied this veneer, this plastic veneer, that everybody has to be the same shiny plastic person that he is.
Yeah, it's like the National Party board looked at what the last administration did and said, you know, if we can just do that, it will be successful. So we get a smiley kind of person who just and waffle and cliche. We shut down anyone but maybe two or three central players. Don't allow them to have any say at all or speak any individual opinions. We clip out anyone who thinks independently and favour just a whole series of ambitious yes people who'll you know, do what they're asked because they're worried about their career. You know, it's that old horrifying quote that I read somewhere. I can't remember where. The problem isn't that you can buy a US congressman for $10,000. The problem is there's a process to eliminate congressmen that you can't buy. And you could make your own version of that for New Zealand. You know, there's a process to eliminate principal politicians or conviction politicians.
Which, again, we talked about reading the room. When we actually see a party like New Zealand First, which has actually got a dearth of conviction politicians in there, and they're actually holding pretty stable. The polls have not been flat. I mean, Luxon must be looking at those coming back going, they've been sort of borderline, and the latest Talbot Mills now has that left block of the Greens, Te Pāti Māori and Labour being able to cobble together a government. I mean, imagine how terrifying that would be.
Well, it's one thing to say you'll vote for Labour. It's another thing to say you'll vote for Labour, the Greens and Te Pāti Māori. You know, I'm not so worried about that. But I mean, you know, I'd like to think that we've given, you know, on this show, probably $800,000 worth of political consultancy to National, if only they'd listen. Yeah, for free.
You know what puzzles me? 12% for the Greens. What's wrong with these people?
Well, it's the long march through the institutions. You and I, you know, think about school kids and you think, well, they went to school, we went to school. It's not the same thing. That they don't have a process where they think, is this right? They've had that long march through the institutions thing where they think, is this what good boys and girls think? Because I want to be a good boy and girl, so I'll think that climate change, and so yeah, that's where a lot of it comes from, and it's kind of the problem has been that the coalition government hasn't taken the opportunity to speak to that Eric Weinstein observation that people keep going back to Marxism because there hasn't been a way to offer sufficient consolation prizes to the losers in capitalism. And they should have done that. I mean, the attack on beneficiaries this week after just that announcement, you know what? We're gonna borrow another 24 billion. As I said, it'll be 70 billion by 2030. We're gonna borrow 20, 24 billion, 30 billion. We're going to send it to corrupt developing nations that have nuclear weapons via one of the world's most corrupt carbon markets to have zero impact on the stated aim of reducing a trace gas that's vital to all life. So that wasn't popular. And honestly, you look at every announcement Luxon's making on X, that's 80% of them are saying, get out of Paris. Get out of the Paris Accord. My thing's been more moderate. I say, oh, you don't have the balls to do that. I understand that. Get agriculture out the way you said you would, not just by subsidizing farmers so you can still get the clappy claps, but by taking it out, by saying, as I said, like, earlier this week, we kind of made a mistake with that one. And we thought we'd get back to the original Paris Accord, which stated that food production was exempt.
Dropping tonight is the new CR360, which I'm doing with Alistair. I'm sort of his wing woman, as it were. And in that, I do an interview with Elizabeth Rata, Professor
Yeah,
Elizabeth
cool.
Rata, and we touched on education and essentially that sort of Marxist bent all the way through and the effect that it has on democracy. And that is actually a really tangible effect. That 12% of the Greens is really 20 years of brainwashing of our children, as you said, through the education system by their educators. And this is, and then they come out as shiny minted 18-year-olds and they think, oh, this is what we have to vote for, or this is the cause that we must get behind. And well, I'm a good person, I'm a good girl, I'm a good
Yeah.
girl. And yeah, and it's sad. And I guess, they've got a lot of growing up to do. But the difficulty is that when you've got a party that actually has power, that sits in the house, that takes up space, takes up airtime, drives everybody crazy. But I guess that's democracy, isn't it? Because we've got and imbued that power within them. And it's, oh, it does. I mean, I look at what went on, and in a way, thank goodness that you've got New Zealand First giving them a bit of borax in the house, because, I mean, some of their ideas are just absolutely crazy town. And actually, speaking of crazy town ideas, I just segue another crazy town idea, Te Pāti Māori and this whole oversight Waitangi commissioner that Rāwhiti Waititi sort of mooted. Like this, I mean, it's like, what? I mean, it's like this Māori dictator. I was flabbergasted. But you know what? There'll be lemmings out there that will absolutely suck that up and think that that's wonderful.
Yeah, there's that tiredness of empire. I struck it meeting up with some mates of mine who are, pretty hard-nosed corporate lawyers and corporate guys. And I was saying, man, you do not want to let this voice legislation get away on you, because it's not about being better for Aborigines. It's about eroding Australian patriotism so it's easier to take you over. And there was this real tiredness, like, oh, well, we should do something for the Abos. It's kind of, and I mean, you want to do something for them? I mean, maybe stop so many of them getting abused as children in those communities they're in, because th there's this really terrible failure to confront how awful life is for so many children, Aboriginal children. The percentage of them who have chlamydia through abuse and the early drug use as a result, it's that bigotry of lowered expectations that comes with that Marxist kind of desire to for intersectional victim points.
Yeah, equity, Marty, equity.
Equity.
Equity. I'm reading, actually, I'm halfway through Trevor Luddin's new book on Anthony Albanese, because I'm going to be talking to
Right.
Trevor about it shortly. And oh, talking about Marxism,
Are
we
you
thought,
hearing it read in his laconic voice?
yeah. No, I've actually got a he sent me a PDF reader's copy, and I've actually got a little reader app so I can
Right.
multitask and do things. I've got a nice English lady reading it to me.
Right.
Yes. However, it is his Marxist roots seriously make our Comrade Jacinta
Oh.
oh, look like Mary Poppins. I mean,
Yeah, there's so
Anthony
many Manchurian
Albanese,
candidates.
dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, I swear if he ever got budgie smugglers off, there would be a hammer and sickle tattooed on his ass. It is wow.
Yeah.
And it
Yeah, no,
actually
he.
makes sense. Everything, the whole voice referendum, as soon, I mean, I'm only halfway through the book, but I'm like, oh, now this all makes perfect sense.
Yeah. No, they mean it. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, as I've said before, those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it, and those who do study history are doomed to watch every other dumb bastard repeat it. So that's what we're up
Exactly.
against. It's that, and you know, it's amazing, as I said, the number of young people are openly saying, "Well, I'm a communist." It's like, dude, maybe we should have the Gulag Archipelago as required reading at school.
Yeah, I know. But remember, they're going to do it differently this time, Mark, Marty.
Yeah, because we care. I mean, you know, that idea that National basically said, look, we'll be like Jacinda, but more efficient. And I mean, I'm starting to see some people posting that a similar message to the one we saw from Democrats in the US, that we need to get behind our weak candidate that no one likes, or we'll get the orange man. And the problem we have, of course, is that New Zealand's orange man is far worse than America's. We don't get a good orange man. We get a little sausage roll and eating, coke drinking, squeaky voiced, beady-eyed little one.
Yeah, I know. I know. You know, and having spent a little bit of time in a communist country while I was away, yeah, be careful what you wish for. One
Yeah.
of the things that stunned me in Vietnam, we went to Da Nang, and now, to be fair, there was massive, there's two things actually. There was a massive typhoon that hit Vietnam in September, October, September last year. Made Cyclone Gabrielle look like a pup by the sound of it. And it hit Ha Long Bay really hard, and latterly Da Nang. Now, in Ha Long Bay, what I couldn't get over, like, there were all these just like trees, sapling trees, all with these stands around them everywhere. And you could see the hills and stuff looked a bit stripped. And it just literally, this typhoon just literally stripped the entire vegetation off the sides of these hills. And in a matter of just months, they had gone through, because they understand that Ha Long Bay is at the core of their tourism industry, one of the cores. So they had gone through and had replanted as everything that they could in these trees, right throughout the streets, the neighborhoods, everything, to recover and get the place back up and running from the typhoon. So, I mean, that level of, and they got the army in to do it, and it just happened.
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, ors, and buts, no red tape. No such thing as red tape there. It just happened. Then we get down to Da Nang, and we're driving into Da Nang, and this is stunning beach, like beautiful white sand, coral ocean, like really beautiful. And you're driving along, and there's all these developments. And if anyone has ever been to the Cook Islands and seen the Sheraton Hotel abandoned, the old hotel was Hilton, I can't remember. Sheraton,
Yeah.
yeah, abandoned there. Well, it's like that. So, in various stages of abandonment. So, abandoned hotel shell, one actually quite new. Are they working on that now? No, that stopped during COVID. And so, for every single resort that's up, running, and live, there would be three ghost resorts as you're dotted along. And they would pull in investment, and then it wouldn't work, or the government would pull the pin, or something would happen. And then it was like, no, that's it, done. No recourse, no due process, you're done.
Yeah.
And then you it was Yeah, it was really eye-opening. And you know, also the inflation, I have to admit it, there's something really crazy going to a money machine and getting out a 1 million dong note because of inflation. Yeah, crazy. But there you go. But careful what you wish for, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, but yeah, the blind loyalty has got to end. We've got to hopefully after Trump's latest election, politicians do have a bit of a come to Jesus moment and think, well, we've got to give people what they want.
So then on that, to that point then, I think you've raised a really good point, Marty, is that now across all major opinion polls in the United Kingdom, Nigel Farage and Reform are now the dominant political party in all of those polls. And that has happened in a really short space of time, but off the back of absolutely catastrophically dire mismanagement by the current Prime Minister and his party. So, do you think that we could see a tipping of the scales here, whether it be Seymour Peters, the Greens or Te Pāti Māori, it could be any minor party, to that scale that Farage has had in the United Kingdom with Reform?
I think it's really important to bear in mind the switch that happened around Brexit. Brexit really spooked the blob, and the adage became populism is the enemy of democracy, and all that USAID money that's gone to the BBC, it's gone to media companies around the world. With the aim of squashing populist movements in Germany and Austria and Belgium.
Cuba.
And now that's been disconnected. It's taken their finger off the scales. It's coming. Populism's coming. And the challenge is to, well, firstly, build in that consolation prize for those left behind. So, the whole jumping on beneficiaries when you get criticized. I think most New Zealanders are repulsed by that. They realize there's, I can't remember the ratio, but there's something like 30,000 people on some sort of benefit and maybe 10,000 jobs advertised. It's something like that. So it's no point in bashing people who are already down when there's so much other low-hanging fruit. I think the impact of this new Trump administration is just starting, and I'm not confident. I mean, New Zealand's problem is we've elected a steady as she goes government in a hang on to your hats time, or about as simply as I could put it. And the answer earlier might have been blind loyalty to a party, but the answer now is for National to listen to their voters, National specifically. And what the voters are saying, as far as I can tell, is we don't want the $30 billion climate millstone around our economy's neck. We don't want your solution to that millstone, namely to give New Zealand the most lax genetic modification laws, so farmers can spend $60,000 each year dosing their cows with Frankenbacteria to so they fart less. If people have looked at the latest data, they don't want your government forcing councils to mass medicate our water with fluoride. We don't appreciate your continued cowardly fawning to Maori ethno-nationalists. And we think you've backed the wrong horse, fawning over Obama and denigrating Trump to the extent that your relationship with the US is now untenable. So that's a rough summary of the message that I'm seeing National get, and they'd better listen to it because Orange Man, very bad. I'm
So,
talking about Hipkins.
Hipkins, yeah. So then, taking your observations that you mentioned m many times last year, both in Fourth Estate and here, around who the consumers and the customers of legacy media were, and the customers of legacy media were no longer the readers or subscribers, but those who are actually the advertisers and paying the piper, as it were. Is Christopher Luxon actually, has he fallen into that same trap and actually forgot the fact that it's the voters who he should be appealing to, but instead he's concentrating all his efforts on these external forces outside of New Zealand in order to be part of the continued blobby club, international blobby club, and be, you know, part of the cool kids gang, actually forgetting that that's not necessarily what the people who voted him there want him to be concentrating on.
Well, I don't think he sees that as his mission. His mission is to, you know, I've actually worked, you know, in fast moving consumer goods, so I'm used to selling things. So what he sees his role as is selling New Zealand as a reality that is desired by BlackRock, by the World Economic Forum. And that's why he's oblivious to public opinion, much the same way as the media seems to be oblivious to it. You know, you look at when Three News said when News Hub said they were going out of business, essentially, people going, well, good, couldn't have happened to, you know, a more climate alarmist, race-baiting pack of wankers. And now they're saying much the same thing about Luxon.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was, you know, getting back to that Jenny May article, you know, actually, I talked to iwi leaders and what they really want is a strong economy, and they want the opportunity to work with overseas investment partners. I mean, that's who he's talking about. He's talking about BlackRock. He's got a mate who's on the board. So his job isn't to give New Zealand what they want, what we need. His job is to just lard what the blob wants to give us in a whole lot of corporate fluffy speak, and to also be a lightning rod for the hatred.
Mm.
You know, you know, a lot of corporate guys are like that. It's like, well, you know, I don't like firing people, but the hourly rate's much better than the hourly rate of those getting fired, so I'll do it. You know, my wife likes our holiday home and kids have to go to private schools. They'll just, you know, put on his American psycho face and do it.
You mentioned before, no, I know it's, and this is the thing. And the trouble is that legacy media don't control the narrative anymore. I mean, the truth has a way of getting out. And we saw that with the second election with Donald Trump, right? Even with all the censorship that they put in play across 2016 to try and suppress things in 2020, and even it was on steroids by that stage, it gets out. In this country,
well, it does, because Elon Musk bought X.
Exactly.
I have some reservations about Elon Musk. You know, I like his whole fixation on putting electrodes in people's brains and connecting them to the internet. Yeah, I know about that.
So then with that, you mentioned before about the US aid situation. Yeah. And I mean, we've often talked about the Belt and Road initiatives with China and all the money that they throw around in the Pacific and, you know, for friendships and favours and cooperation. Well, of course, just blown up in the last few days has been the fact that they, as part of the Doge initiative by Elon, is to actually look where all the spending is going. And then they've looked at this US aid, which is the US Agency for International Dependency.
Yeah, it's a money laundering organization.
For the CIA, yeah. Basically.
Yeah.
So, pretty much. So they've now turned that spigot off.
Yeah, and a lot of the truth about, yeah, a lot of the truth about what they were actually doing is coming out. I mean, Mike Benz was saying they've had to release the red lines that Washington issued. You know, careful not to be the CIA. It was some civic citizens blah blah that sounded all fluffy, but it was the blob and the minutiae that they subjected him to. You know, because a lot of people were saying, hey, you know, this guy isn't a good guy. He cracked down on the church. He stopped elections. He's basically, he didn't do that because he wanted to do that. He did it because organizations like USAID, which are a sock puppet for the CIA, were telling him he had to do it. Don't allow any of the former administration's politicians to come back. Don't negotiate with Russia at all about redefining borders. It's horrifying. And I mean, there's an article, an interview I watched with David Martin the other day, outlining some of just the awful stuff that's going on In terms of Medicaid is basically bankrupt, Social Security is bankrupt, so they've got to crash the stock market. Say, oh, that's why you've lost your retirement savings. I guess universal basic income and central bank digital currencies, we've got no choice. And he was also saying, another side of that is they've had to find a way to, I mean, their stated aim was we need a 15% population reduction, or roughly a billion people need to go. And the super's not there for these over 65. So we've got this problem where we've stopped young people breeding, and so now there's this big bubble of baby boomers who need support by a dwindling number of workers who are increasingly incapable of being worth hiring. So we've got to get rid of a few.
Oh, you're such a font of cheer
I
today,
know
Marty.
I said I didn't, but yeah,
Oh.
you've got to confront, and this is the awful thing. It's that moment in the Matrix where the guy's saying, I know this isn't a mistake, but
Yeah,
I'm
this
happy
is
with the illusion.
one of the articles I flicked you was one in the Daily Mail Australia, and it was the headline is Donald Trump and Elon Musk's USAID closure will hit BBC charity, and it's called BBC Media Action. And BBC Media Action, it funds a range of projects in countries in 50 languages across the world, from advising the United Nations on media disinformation to mentoring journalists in Africa on climate change and changing perceptions about COVID-19 vaccinations. The charity, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary, says its work is building stronger democracies and making it safer and a more habitable planet and creating more inclusive societies, especially for the disabled and LGBTQI plus people. Talk about saying the really quiet parts out loud. And you know what? If this was the, I mean, this is essentially the Public Interest Journalism Fund on steroids.
Yeah.
And it's
Well,
been
it's
going
because
on for
it came from
25
the
years.
same place. Jacinda's gone back to the epicenter of this at Harvard. I mean, they're the nexus between the academic, the corporate, and the pharmaceutical industry and the blob. Like she's just gone home like a homing pigeon, homing
Yeah.
horse.
So
Like
the
one of those
thing.
horses riding back without a rider in the saddle.
Oh dear. Well, this is the thing. And I mean, what will be interesting, I mean, this is creating massive, massive waves internationally. There seems to be a desire by the Trump administration to throw a light, and they say sunlight is the best disinfectant on many of these things. They've just called a pause on this stuff. So they haven't completely dismantled it yet. But I guess this is part of their way of, I think, dismantling this blob, dismantling the deep state, and sending a very, very clear message. Yep, this is what we're going to do. And they know they can do it because Milei has done a good chunk of that. And what he's managed to not only balance their balance the books in the in Argentina, but actually get a
Have a
surplus with the
surplus.
best job, and he's done it in 12 months.
Yeah.
So it can happen. So
Well.
yeah, it's pretty. There's a lot of very intriguing things to happen, and I think yeah, we do need to watch the space. And so, bringing it back to a New Zealand context, I'm actually really excited to see what happens when the mantle, I think it's around May-ish, gets handed over to David Seymour as Deputy Prime Minister, because I think that Deputy Prime Minister label has sort of clipped Winston's wings a little. I think he is dying to get his
All right.
teeth into some stuff. And once he's shed that and he's handed it to David, I think we'll find leading into the election. Watch out. I think Peters and Jones and the rest of that team will really start flexing their muscle on some of these issues, because I know that they're not completely down with, like, they've had to make concessions in the coalition agreement in order to get some of their key policies across the line. And
Right.
that's the thing with the coalition, you know, it's about compromise. Well, when it comes to an election, all of those gloves come off, don't they? And I'm wondering whether things like this GE technology bill will be one of them, that New Zealand First, at the moment, they're begrudgingly going along with it because I think they wanted to do that to get, potentially get the COVID inquiry part two across the line. I don't know what it was, but
They've been pretty good at not criticizing each other. I mean, it's been remarkably
Yeah, they have.
stable. I mean, I could give them, as I said, a bit of free political consultancy. I mean, here's what I think the coalition could do to win the next election. Here's what I'd suggest they do. I think ACT should be given the opportunity to run several pilot programs that put some of their ideas into practice, much as they have been with charter schools. Reform labor laws to make hiring less daunting, reduce regulatory burden, sell best practice policy from overseas, that kind of thing. So you satisfy the people who want less government and more freedom. They've pretty much stunk out this term, as I said earlier, with the Treaty Principles Bill, which is needed, but in the end, they gave it a lawyer-friendly loophole for more of the same crap. So, a far better thing for them to have focused on would have been a get New Zealand the hell out of the Paris Accord bill. And I think that would be a lot more uniting and more people would get behind it. National should just basically focus on doing the basics brilliantly. To keep those fart in a gust of wind voters happy, fix Labor's mess and constantly articulate what that mess is, why it's there, and why it must never happen again. New Zealand First are pretty much the only political party who haven't queered their pitch with Trump, and they should focus on the same working people who are alienated by the Democrats and give them something to vote for and get behind. They need to come up with some of those consolation prizes Eric Weinstein identified, to stop people going back to Marxism. They can focus on devolution, on regional plans that can soak up the unemployed. I think that's vital rather than ragging on the unemployed to say, hey, look, what you're talking about in Vietnam, we've got this many trees to plant. People can put their hand up to go on a different path. So, you can take your whole family, we'll have remediation. Some education, you'll come out of doing this better, and really sort of have a program to make some of these families more functional, all the while planting trees. You could pull in drug treatment programs, all sorts of things like that, but consolation prizes. I mean, they could make a case for what we might achieve with the billions we won't be setting on fire as a burnt offering to the climate fairies. So yeah, I think if they can put something like that together, and I mean really, yeah, Luxon, my advice to him is the same as it's always been: features tell, benefits sell, baby. Learn to sell. Just trying to get people to like you isn't the same as trying to get them to buy from you. They need to understand that you're interested in their problems, you've listened to what they say, and you match your offering to their problems. That's how you sell to people, Chris. I know it's easy when you're with a big corporate. I was with a big corporate doing sales, and at the end of it, I had this gnawing feeling that I couldn't sell. And so I went and sold used cars and I learned to sell.
Well, having, as you know, I spent decades in the sales area, so I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think what that point that you made about New Zealand First, the first thing that popped into my head when you said that is that this is where I think that there are a lot of Labour voters that are ripe for the picking. And New Zealand First is the party that I think can pick those voters off. I've spoken to so many old school Labour people, these are union labor, working class labor, everyday, decent, bloody good Kiwi battler labor.
I'd count myself in that group too. There are people who are getting a raw deal with the way society's fixed up. Their kids aren't reaching their potential. You can't get them interested in the environment until they've got reliable food supplies and security. So, and I think that's a vital thing to say to those drifting Labor supporters. We care about the same things. We just don't think that borrowing billions and just spraying it at people who don't have the understanding of how to live a fulfilling life that contributes to wider society.
There's a lot of opportunities there for sure. Now, we did our little teaser, which has only sort of been out for a day or two. And in there, one of the things that Marty and I brought up was is some of the topics that you want to hear us talk about this year and some of the directions, because you know, Marty and I, because we've known each other for so long, we have a tendency to go down pathways that we know that we, you know, we're interested in talking about ourselves. But there might be stuff that you guys are particularly interested in. And we know a number of you have sent us last year and the year before some really great ideas. And we've actually followed some of those pathways down. So do send them in. The inbox is up, running and open. So that's inbox at realitycheck.radio.
Send a link to something that you read. And it doesn't need to be mainstream media either. I think at this point, we've got to start talking a bit more about what's happening.
You and I have both decided to spread our wings a little bit more this year on that front, haven't we? Because the thing is the news now, the centre of what's going on, isn't happening in the legacy media. That is shrinking like the shriveled grape, and we're having to
it's
cast our net
a lot harder. Seriously.
Yeah, so send us what. So 2057's a text, inbox at realitycheck.radio is that email. So do send in your thoughts and ideas and stuff that you've seen. And make sure too that you have, like, you cast your eye back. We mentioned Mike Benz before as part of this USAID stuff. Now, he is, I tell you what, he has just exploded in the last few months. We actually were one of, in New Zealand, I think, were the first media outlet that gave Mike a platform and a voice. We've interviewed him a couple of times more than a year ago. Do hunt him out on our new website, which is will be coming, or even just in the current one. Just pop in there, Mike Benz, and you'll find him, because he has been a canary in the coal mine on this. And I'm so thrilled that finally that message is starting to get through. And I mean, he has done thousands of hours of interviews, hasn't he, Marty? Just trying to spotlight what's been going on.
He's got the receipts, and yeah, he knows what's going on. I mean, ideally, I guess we'd have a clearinghouse where we all get together and you know, put in things that strike us as a missing piece of the puzzle, so we can all put together something that gives us an impression of what reality is.
Yeah,
and if we do it together, it's less terrifying than doing it by yourself with your eyes wide open.
There you go. Now, what have you got planned for getting back into the new year? Did you set any resolutions or anything like that? Or are we just making sure that life in Chickenopolis and the Papadopoulos, you know, with the Digginopolis, is all going well?
Actually, my wife said to me the other day, "What the hell have you been saying on the radio?" I said, "Why?" She said, "I had a patient come in asking me how Diggins was, and I was like, oh, how the chickens were."
Really important stuff.
I've got to,
Mrs. Marty,
do more practical. I've got to do more practical things this year. So I've got to have a parallel bit of doing, and I've got to get together with, I think, get together with some men, and I'd like to form a group to hunt criminals in the neighbourhood in a spreading circle. I'd like to set up, a hunting club, not to violence them, but to catch them. You know,
right. Right.
You know, get some cameras that are linked to a common Telegram channel or something like that. Or if someone's having some trouble, they can. That's how the mafia formed, of course.
So your very own independent neighborhood watch.
Well, I just want to make a scumbag free zone. And I think most people can get behind that. And once you've got a group of men getting together to do that, you can do all sorts of things. You can sort of say, well, who's going to go on the school board and make sure that we're not getting those people with a creepy interest in the sexuality of other people's children feeding into, you know, telling our children that maybe the doctors got it wrong when they were born and saw a dick, and maybe they're actually meant to have it chopped off and stuff like that.
Well, there you go. Life goals, Martin, life goals. Right, this has been us. I hope you've enjoyed this in video format. We've tested it out for the very first time. It's very exciting for us, and we hope to do this for you moving forward. And as I say, 2057 is the text, inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email if you've got anything you'd like to say. And we're going to do these each week, and they should be dropping pretty much every Thursday for you, just like the bad old days. But you get to see Marty and I and all our glory.
You know, I might wear my best t-shirt next time.
Yes, and actually, we're probably doing our little march rota up in Marty's direction. So you never know. Next month there could even be a him and I together in person jobby. Woohoo! It would be exciting, wouldn't it?
We'd be almost proper journalists.
I know, for realsies even. All right, until then, thank you everybody for joining us today, and hopefully we will, well, not hopefully, but definitely we will see you again next week on RCR here with Media Matters with Marie and Marty. Take care. Bye.
Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.